What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And, you know, first of all, happy holidays to everyone. You know, and yo, we're here. You know, this is Philly Fridays, and you already know where we're at. You know, Fet Life Station. At FetLifeStation.com. You can also catch us on all your different streaming apps. You know, just follow the True Crime, the True Stories Podcast Network, the True Stories Podcast Network, and you can catch us on all your streaming applications. And one of the things that I think that, you know, I would like to speak to is, you know, I had suffered a tremendous loss recently. You know, matriarch of my family, my aunt, recently, unexpectedly passed away. You know, so you know, I do tonight's this episode with not tonight, but I do this episode with a heavy heart, but I also do it from the perspective of knowing that life goes on. You know, you're just thankful that, you know, we have the people in our lives for however long we have them in our lives. And, you know, we leave it all to God. You know, we don't know the reason or the whys, but we do know that, you know, nothing happens that's not God's will. So, so, you know, I always, you know, send my blessings up and, you know, and I just pray that, you know, our ancestors, you know, will be waiting for her on the other side and greeting her with warm embrace. So, in addition to that, you know, it's been a lot of things going on since, you know, the last time I jumped on here. And I think one of the things that kind of has captured the world by storm is this Diddy documentary. Now, me personally, I watched maybe about the first like 5 minutes of it. Him sitting inside of a hotel room, actually recording himself. So, you know, I was kind of shocked by how that happened. You know, I was kind of shocked by the fact that, you know, you have this man shooting his own documentary, but the documentary itself is one of those documentaries that are not going to show him in a you know, not going to show him in a glowing light, you know. So, you know what I'm saying, I just didn't know how that was going to work out for him, you know what I'm saying. Hold on 1 second, y'all, I gotta see something. There we go. All right, I had to get one of the settings correct. So, yeah, so I'm sitting there checking the, and I, you know, I didn't, and maybe it's because I really don't have an interest in stuff like that. Like, there's real things going on in the world. Plus, there's so many people who are now doing, like, reactions to it that I've been pretty much sitting up watching those reactions. more so, and from what I gathered from people who have actually watched the documentary, is that no new information was really brought forward. It was just put together nicely and neatly. You know, I think it's like a mini series on Netflix. And so one of the things that I think that that we have to understand is when, you know, things are going on in the world, often at times, you know, there will be distractions purposefully placed in front of you. Like they said, you know, Marie Antoinette, you know, prior to the French Revolution, when they were saying that the people in the streets are losing their minds, she said, give them cake. And in Rome, they said, give them cake and give them games, give them drink. In other words, as long as you can keep the people drunk off of, you know, some form of entertainment, some form of leisure, you'll distract them while the society around them changes, collapses, possibly goes to war. There's been some rumblings with Venezuela and America recently. Maritime issues, you know, boats being bombed, supposedly drug boats, but, you know, you don't know. We'll never know the whole story because you don't find out this stuff till later, right? But I think it's interesting that so many of us choose the distraction. And we were on the shoulders of giants earlier, you know, so hopefully you're coming here after going there and, you know, checking out our discussion. My brothers, Joseph Ward and Patrick Irvin and myself, as we talked about how we choose the distractions, we choose toxic things to sort of occupy our time and occupy our mind. And it's part of nigger culture, right? And that means Western culture, but it's also part of nigger culture. And we just got to be honest about that. Like, nigger culture has no standards. You know what I'm saying? And I know there are people who are not black listening to this, but I mean, shit, they've been saying it, but I'm saying the quiet part out loud. Now, black people have standards, but too many black people still want to align themselves with the worst parts of our culture, which is, like I said, the nigger standards. And so, you know, I think too many of us want to feel like we're down or we can relate to this, to the downtrodden. It's something, you know, live about, you know, slumming, living in a slummy way. And, you know, it's all good and, you know, cool and good until it hits close to home. Until some of those things happen and next thing you know, it's affecting things going on in your house. It's affecting family members. It's affecting, you know, your children. Then it's not so good. Now, you know, we want to be down when none of us snitches until somebody kills somebody in our family. Then it's like, when is the community going to come together to put a stop to this? No, you were part of the other community that was perfectly fine with the shit happening as long as it didn't happen to you. So, but I digress. Speaking of, hold on for a second, man. Speaking of toxic stuff, right? Speaking of toxic shit, you know what I mean? All right. You know, I want y'all to hear some of the dumbest stuff ever, right? And brothers, I always tell y'all, man, you can't really tell women anything, especially in our community. I want y'all to peep this here. I got two clips I want y'all to check out real quick. This is bananas, man. Listening to all this, the craziness that's going on in the world and how people are just perfectly fine with just saying the weirdest and the dumbest ish. You know, so hold on. Check this out, right? I want y'all to check this out. I'm trying to catch it because, you know, these, the technical ain't always the greatest. Check this out.
Back when I was in college, I was dating this guy on and off again that I did not really like at this point.
Ladies, y'all want to see what it's like to date somebody on today's day and age? Viewer discretion is advised.
For whatever reason, we were meeting in our college town, which is a 3-hour drive from me, right? Disclaimer, I was not putting oil in my car. I thought my dad was doing it. He was not. So I'm on the phone with this guy, and I'm talking to him, and I realize that my car engine is starting to kind of smoke, but I'm like, ugh, whatever.
We just started the story, bro. We haven't even gotten to the best part. We just started the story. Your car's engine is smoking and it's whatever? How? This is why I never believed in like that whole women intuition bullshit and women got great discernment. Your intuition, your discernment should have told you something is fucking wrong. I need to pull over. But instead, nah, I'll deal with it later.
And I mentioned it casually and he's like, you should really pull over. And I'm like, I think I know my car. You should really shut the fuck up and not tell me what to do. I'm a grown ass woman.
So this nigga offers you the best advice you could get in that point in time. And your response to him is, you need to shut the fuck up and not tell me what to do because I'm a grown-ass woman. Not only are you a grown-ass woman, you know your car. Okay, Vin Diesel? The way of the independent woman, boy, I tell you, this shit gonna get some of y'all really fucked up.
I continue to drive, and a tow truck driver, after a couple more minutes, comes up next to me, and he's like, your car's on fire. I'm on the phone with my boyfriend, and I'm like, oh, look how many niggas want me. He's telling me that I'm fire, that I look good.
Bro, what the fuck? You can't make this shit up. Motherfucker is telling your car is on fire. You're thinking, I'm like that. I fucking told this nigga. Not everybody want me. Look at that. And nothing clicked in your head like, wait a minute. Fire. So I saw smoke earlier. 2 and 2 would always equal 4 in this fucking situation. But instead, you thought somebody was trying to get at you while you were on the phone with your boyfriend. Let alone a nigga in a tow truck.
In that moment, I also realized that my steering wheel is locked. I cannot move it. My dashboard is frozen. I can't let my boyfriend on the phone know that he won.
What the fuck be wrong with some of y'all? There's nothing to win here. You're about to die. Your car's on the verge of fucking exploding, bro. You're thinking about, I can't let this nigga win. Mind you, the thing that he's gonna win is the advice that he gave you, which was the best advice at the time, is what you don't want him to win. What? I don't even fucking get it. What are you talking about?
So this tow truck driver is telling me, like, slow down, put your caution signals on, and he's motioning to other cars to let me over so I can get off and exit. And I'm maneuvering with all my might to get over. I somehow managed to slow the car down, get over, and the first place off of the highway was a gas station.
I've heard it all. I've heard all of it. Your car's up in flames, and the first place you stop at is a gas station. You cannot make this shit up.
So I genuinely jump out of the car. Wasn't moving fast at this point, but my car is starting to actually go up in flames. It rolls into a stop and I run into the gas station. And I'm like, my car's on fire. And they're like, you decided to go to a gas station? They turn off the gas. The fire department comes. My car is completely totaled. Car was totaled. And the guy that I'm talking about, my then boyfriend, had to drive down and come and get me.
That is literally the life of certain women. Make as many fucked up decisions as you can and somebody else is going to come and fix it for you. Man, life must be great for some of y'all. But you know, unfortunately for you, you ain't gotta listen to shit I'm saying. Cause I'm just a normal guy. Yeah, keep it change.
Oh, that's not the only one. Hold on. Y'all thought that was spicy. Y'all thought that was spicy tuna. Check this one out. Hold on. There's always more.
Jim, and you're a man, and you see me doing the exercise wrong. Do not take the opportunity to walk up to me and tell me the correct way to do it. I was in the gym the other day and I was doing lat pull downs. Had my headphones on. I was in the zone. I was going. All I know is a man, I see him in my peripheral and he's over there like, hey, hey, like doing something. So I slide my headphone off and he's like, hey, you want to pull it right here because you could hurt your rotator cuff. I said, okay. How you know I don't like my rotator cuff a little hurt? Like, I don't like no man telling me nothing. Don't. And then now I'm working out in the gym and I'm like, damn, are you watching every exercise that I do to make sure I'm doing it right? Leave me alone. Don't tell me nothing. Like,
Jesus Christ.
And that's why I always tell you fellas.
Men of the West stand fierce and unyielding, holding the line today as our fathers did, with iron will and hearts of fire.
Yeah, this shit is insane, man. And, you know, this is one of those things where you're not necessarily trying to, like, I'm not trying to sit here and be harsh on the ladies, right? I'm really not. I'm really just trying to this is more so for the fellas, to let the fellas know, hey, yo, brothers, you know, y'all can't be always out here in rescue mode. They don't want to be rescued. All right? They don't want to be rescued. They don't want to be saved until it's like too late. So this is what happens when you talk about protection, right? Provision, protection, blah, blah, blah. When you talk about protection and talking about protecting, like this whole concept that men are supposed to protect the ladies, this, that, and the other, you can't protect anybody that will not listen to you. It's impossible. You cannot protect. They will put you in mortal danger. Somebody come out and you see somebody come around the corner and they start getting ready to do something crazy, like let off shots, and you tell her to get down the duck, and she's like, what, what's going on? What? By then, she already dead. You might as well pull her dead and bleeding carcass over you so that whoever's shooting, you'll have an extra shield. Because they ain't listening. They are not listening. Anyway, so, and, you know, the worst part about a lot of this stuff is how the Mean Girl Club is, right? Like I was checking this one joint out. This was bananas. I want y'all to peep this real quick, because this sister, and this is black on black crime, right? Oh, well, black woman on black female crime. So check this out, right? This lady had this encounter with these three girls, and this is how it went. Hold on. Let me see. Y'all really need to hear this. Turn the mute button off there. All right, let's go.
Bitch, you're ugly as fuck.
Okay.
And you have an ponytail, bitch. What's your grown ass?
A ponytail.
What's your grown ass? You have a.
They told this lady she had an only tail. Yo, these young, and these little, like, these like high schoolers, right? High schoolers, colorful hair. One is in pajamas. You know, look like they all wearing slippers or something. It's crazy, right? But check this out. Listen to the whole thing.
Okay. On your head, bitch. Not a ponytail, bitch. You're only, bitch. You have no hair. You're bald-headed, bitch. You dusty ass bitch.
Now, all these other girls that are saying this to this grown woman, they all have weaves. I want y'all to point that out. I want to point that out to you. All right, weaves with the finger baby hairs and all that shit. That's what they that's what they got right now. But I'm going to let them play on.
I will really fire your shit. I'm dusty, but bitch, you came in here for what?
You walked in here for what? I hear stealing, bitch. You're a goofy, you're a bum.
Now, she would later go on to say that these girls followed her from one star, I believe she's in Five Below. And they were acting raunchy and ratchet, and she just happened to look at them. And I guess she caught they caught her staring, or they caught her glare. And then they had followed her into the Dollar Tree, and that's where you see the exchange going on. But I want y'all to pay attention to the conversation, though. Because could you tell that one of those women was an adult talking to children? Could you tell? And so I think that's one of the biggest problems is you sitting here engaging with these young people, right? And then they're ignorant as all hell. And I've often said, I will never confront females out in public. Never. Because it's too much to go wrong. First of all, they don't understand, like, the rules of engagement when it comes to identifying a possible threat. Identifying a situation for which, you know, somebody can react to or respond to you in a violent manner. They don't have a line, because according to them, you know, they're supposed to be able to get off what they get off with no consequences. Men know the difference, most men. Some of these males don't, but men know the difference. So you won't have a lot of men going back and forth with cats on shit like that, because the men, nah. What'll happen is eventually it's gonna become a time where words are no longer useful, where the best way to express, you know, yourself is the alternative. It becomes physical, and we've seen that, you know. So a lot of men, especially mature men, they chill with the reckless talk because we know it's a lot of things. It's not worth it pushing it over that line, crossing that line. But I want y'all to also peep this right here real quick, right? Because one of the things we're going to talk about on this joint, to, you know, this afternoon or whenever you hear this, one of the things we're going to get into is, I hate when people tag me and shit. I really do. All these dings going off. Anyway, one of the things we're going to get into is this whole notion of men and loneliness and so forth. I want y'all to hear this, you know, this piece from our favorite psychologist, O'Ryan Teraban, you know, Psych Hacks. I want y'all to hear this piece because one of the things that he gets into is why a lot of men are not getting into marriages. So check this out.
Things are you like finding that men want to have children as much as they did in the past?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I think the rates are going down.
So that's why I'm asking, because I'm wondering if men are wanting to have kids less, and I know women, I know in general people are having kids later and less, then why is that a factor still so much?
That's a great question. Well, I don't think it necessarily needs to be, but why would a woman want to get married? So in my opinion, the only reasonable reason to get married is to start a family. Otherwise, you can just be two adults who enjoy spending time with each other. Like, why do you have to get the government involved? Why do you have to make a contract? It's kind of weird because we talk about it being like love. But like, I'm sure you love your friends, but you never sat them down and made them sign a document that promised that they would never stop being your friend. And if they did, you would be entitled to all kinds of compensation as a consequence of that. Like, a friend who gave you that agreement would look at you like you're nuts and be like, this is not a friend. Dude, we're just homies. Like, why do we need a contract?
I think you misinterpret how much I like you.
Are you finding that men...
Yeah. And I think that what he's talking about is, you know, there's a whole notion towards family and marriage. With women choosing not to have children until later dates, and a lot of women you come into contact now, they probably either have children or they've chosen not to have children. But by the time they get to you as a mature man, they don't want to have any more kids, right? And I went through something like this in a relationship where, you know, the woman she chose, she said she didn't want to have any more kids. And we were engaged. She waited until we got engaged to tell me this shit after she had known that I wanted kids. And we were in our late 20s. So we were still at the age where that could have been a possibility. So, you know, but I got something else queued up, and I want us to really look into this. And the title of this particular clip is Why Older Men Are Choosing to Die Alone Instead of Dating Again. And it really speaks to men over 50, right? I happen to be over 50. And you can find this clip on YouTube. You have to go to the page Psych Core. It's like one word, Psych Core. And you can check this out. But I want y'all to listen to this. I'm going to let it play a lot because, you know me, I'll chime in. So I am going to chime in, though. Don't get it messed up. I am going to say something. Well, you already know. But here we go.
Older men aren't afraid of dying alone. They're afraid of wasting the years they have left on someone who destroys their peace. And once a man learns the value of silence, he never trades it for chaos again. Section 1. The Confession. Older men don't say out loud. There's a quiet truth older men carry, one they rarely say out loud, because they already know how people will react to it. But if you sit with them long enough, if you listen without judging, eventually the truth slips through. It sounds simple, it sounds harsh, but it's honest. They say, I'd rather die alone than date again. And they don't say it with anger. They don't say it with bitterness. They say it with a strange sense of relief, like a man finally admitting something he's been holding inside for years. Most people don't understand this choice. Families think it's sadness. Friends think it's fear. Society thinks it's some kind of dramatic, unhealthy reaction to aging. But older men know the truth. They aren't avoiding dating because they've given up on love. They're avoiding dating because they finally understand the cost of it. Not the emotional cost alone, The cost to their time, their peace, their routines, their stability, their identity. Costs they paid without complaint for decades. When a younger man dates, he sees hope. He sees possibility. He sees a future he still has the strength to build. But an older man sees something completely different. He sees everything dating will require from him. The energy, the compromise, the emotional negotiation, the fear of being used, the pressure to impress, the vulnerability of trusting someone new. He knows
And let me just jump in. I told you I was going to jump in. Another thing, too, that is that they didn't speak on this particular clip is the fact that at certain ages, men are ruled by the levels of chemicals in their body, the testosterone, right? And when your testosterone is very high as a man, one of the things is it'll push you to do all those other things. So when you're, you know, late teens up into your early 30s, levels of testosterone flowing through your bloodstream is a lot more than what happens as, you know, your testosterone production starts to slow down. You know, we start getting that little pudge around the gut. We have to do extra things, take supplements, things of that nature after 35. Well, along with that, you don't have that drive anymore to push through and push through all the nonsense. So you're willing to carry the extra weight, to carry the extra burdens and so forth. Once you get older and you don't have to deal with that no more, like you don't have to deal with that urge, it's like, you know, now it's more so a cost effect, you know, benefits sort of analysis. And you have to measure through pros and cons, is this situation going to be worth it? You know it's going to extract something from you. Is she going to fill your cup up enough to the point where it's more of a fair exchange? And a lot of men are just choosing to opt out at this particular moment because at this point, the one thing they talked about is true. Peace matters more to a man. Peace matters more than a peace when you get to a certain level of maturity. Some people never reach it. Some people never hit their prime. So they're vicariously trying to relive their glory days, chasing women and things of that nature. But as I always said, a man that has a purpose will never lack for the attention of women. Men who prioritize women over of all will never, ever achieve much in life. All right, there I said it.
Exactly how heavy that weight is, because he carried it once already. And here's the part people miss. Older men aren't choosing loneliness. They're choosing clarity. They're choosing control over their own lives. They're choosing mornings without conflict and nights without emotional tension. They're choosing a life where nothing is being demanded of them anymore, a life where they finally get to be enough on their own. So when an older man says he'd rather die alone, he isn't confessing defeat. He's declaring freedom. He's saying he finally understands what he needs, and what he needs more than anything else is peace. Section 2. When a man has already given his best years. There's something people forget about older men. They've already lived entire lives built around responsibility. Decades of showing up, providing, fixing, supporting, sacrificing, and holding everything together, even on days when they felt like they were falling apart inside. Most older men didn't get the luxury of choosing themselves when they were young. They were expected to be the foundation everyone else stood on, and they did it, quietly, consistently, without applause. So when people tell them to get back out there and start dating again, they don't realize what they're really asking.
In Western culture, you know, Western culture has been, you know, it hasn't been a patriarchy for a long time, right? It's been a gynocracy, right? And we talk about the gynocracy in the black community, but there's a Western form of gynocracy where laws and policies have been put in place to appeal to women, to make the world a safer place for women, to make the world more convenient for women, to create more advantages for women. And so that's just not systemic. It's also socially too, right? Because that's when you throw in that protector, provider sort of thing. Even sex, right? Sex, when you're having sex with a woman, it don't matter. Like, your results don't matter unless she has an orgasm, unless she's able to, you know, moisturize down there, you know, unless she get the tingles. Nothing you do matter. You get blamed for everything. You get blamed for if your privates don't get hard, your wood don't get hard. You get blamed for if her goods don't get wet, she's not aroused, you get blamed for all that. Performance-wise, that's why there's a so-called thing called a BDR. And y'all know what a BDR is? BDR is called, and I've known this since I was a teenager, it's called a bad dick report. It's called a BDR, bad dick report. Because at the end of the day,
I'm done with life, and it's all Jermaine's fault. It's always Jermaine's fault. I'm done.
It's always your fault. So that's why in a society that's catered towards, you know, making these appeals for women and so forth, you know, because let's face it, if men wanted to, they didn't have to give any rights to women. And what could women do about it? What are you going to do, go to war? Like, there were literally laws in the book. And I'm not saying I'm down with this, but there were literally laws in the book that said a man who is married to a woman could never be convicted of raping her. Could never be convicted of raping her. Think about that for a second. Up until the 50s, right? So, you know, all the world has changed a lot to sort of like cater to make the world a better, a safer place for women. On the flip side, it's become a harder place for men. And then you have these new modern day expectations about what a man has to do now in the Western world to even qualify for average and below average women. And women never even hold their fellow sisters accountable to a standard that would state that they themselves would qualify for the things they're asking for. But I digress.
You're asking a man who spent his strongest years carrying others to willingly step back into another role that demands more than it gives. They're asking him to pour from a cup that's finally full of his own peace. They're asking him to restart a journey he already finished long ago, a journey that cost him more than anyone around him ever understood. Older men remember the emotional labor of relationships, the compromises that slowly erased pieces of themselves, the expectations they were supposed to meet without complaint, the way their wants often took a back seat to everyone else's needs, and they remember how easily their efforts were taken for granted, not out of malice, but because men are expected to endure, absorb, and continue. Now, after decades of doing exactly that, many older men simply don't have the desire to sign up for another round. Not because they lack the ability, not because they're incapable of love, but because they know with absolute clarity what it cost them the first time. They know how much of their life they invested into relationships, emotionally, financially, mentally, physically. They know how much they gave up, and they know how long it took to rebuild themselves afterward. Dating again means reopening doors they finally closed. It means risking the stability they worked hard to create. It means giving away the parts of themselves they just reclaimed. And for many older men, the math simply doesn't add up anymore. They feel they've already given their best years, and they aren't willing to lose what they have left. Section 3, peace becomes the new luxury. There comes a moment in a man's life when he finally understands what real peace feels like. It doesn't happen in his 20s. It usually doesn't happen in his 30s either. Those years are filled with noise. The noise of ambition. The noise of relationships. The noise of other people's expectations. But as men get older, something shifts. The world gets quieter. Their home gets quieter. Their mind gets quieter. And for the first time, they notice how good silence feels. For many older men, peace becomes the most valuable thing they've ever experienced. Not excitement, not romance, not the thrill of starting over. Peace. The kind of peace where you wake up and nothing is demanded from you. The kind of peace where you don't have to measure your words or manage someone's mood. The kind where your home finally feels like a refuge instead of another battlefield.
And I've spoken about this before, right? So this is how you know I was on to something. Remember when I said that if you go to your local watering hole, you don't even have to go to the local watering hole, right? You go to your job where like an old head has a position, right? Low maintenance position. You know, he might be a custodian. You might see him in there mopping up the floors, cleaning up the bathroom, whatever. One of the things that you don't see, right, is him always talking about going to the club and all that other shit. That same brother is the one that you'll find at this either at home, now with all the luxuries we have. But if he wants to get social, he'll go down to the local, you know, hole in the wall, watering hole, and one of the things he'll do, he'll just sit there, he'll order his food if they have a kitchen. He'll eat his fish sandwich or his smothered turkey wing platter. He'll have a beer or a drink or two and just sit back and enjoy the atmosphere, watch the game, and go home. No intentions of any social engagement. Like, it would literally have to fall in his lap for him to indulge somebody, you know, a female, a lady, to get to know her or whatever. She would have to actually initiate the conversation. Go, just go. Listen, as a social experiment, go to the local hole in the wall, right? Where the older people go. Not where these young folk are. Where the older people go. And look at who's in there, who's chilling, minding their business, taking in the atmosphere, watching the game, or just, you know, just having a quiet moment to themselves. It's called peace. And men, after a certain age, they stop chasing a peace, and all they want is peace.
When a man gets a taste of that kind of calm, it's almost impossible for him to give it up, because he remembers how rare it was during most of his life. In relationships, he was the stabilizer, the fixer, the emotional anchor. Even in good relationships, peace wasn't his by default. He had to work for it, maintain it, protect it. It was something constantly at risk of being disrupted. Now, living alone, peace just exists, effortlessly, predictably, quietly, and that quiet becomes addictive. Men discover that solitude isn't empty, it's restorative. It gives them space to think, breathe, heal, and reconnect with the parts of themselves they lost along the way. It gives them evenings without conflict, mornings without tension, weekends without obligations.
Think about this, right? Think about how men talk about, like, their leisure time, right? You know how many men that I know that, you know how many men that I know that actually, you know, want to go fishing on the weekends? They don't talk, like, I'm talking about men that's my age, 50 and up. They want to go fishing, or, you know, they want to go hiking or something, or they want to take a road trip. They basically want to do something for which that they can have some like a peaceful form of leisure. They don't actually mature men ain't out here trying to be the old man at the club. It's not it's not happening. So, you know, I just think that one of the things that we need to fully actualize and understand is that we need to, as younger brothers get older, we need to let them understand this reality instead of what's being projected on them with all of these hit pieces on young men who choose to be single, young men who are choosing to, you know, go their own way and so forth. We need to be, you know, more understanding of what that means and what that looks like. And so that they don't get played out of their position, okay?
It gives them a sense of control they never had when compromise ruled everything. So when people ask older men why they won't date again, the answer is simple. Dating threatens the one thing they value most now, their peace. And once a man builds a life where peace finally sits at the center, he guards it with everything he has, because he knows exactly what it cost him to earn it, and he refuses to lose it again. Section 4, the emotional cost of rebuilding trust. Trust is something younger people treat lightly, but older men know better. They've lived long enough to understand that trust isn't just a feeling, it's an investment. One that can cost years of your life if you give it to the wrong person. And after decades of relationships, marriages, breakups, divorce settlements, disappointments, or even the death of a partner, rebuilding trust feels less like hope and more like stepping into a storm without cover.
And that's another thing too. Men, when you get older, money means something, but more so because the more money you have, the more you can free up your time. Time is of the essence, and the older you get, you realize just by the law of nature, right? You realize that the older you get, the closer you come. Like, every day you're alive is one day closer to your death. And because we realize that and we recognize that, things become a little more valuable, because time is we're dealing with scarcity when it comes to time. And we take that a lot more seriously.
Younger men trust easily because they haven't lost much yet. Older men trust cautiously because they've already lost too much. They know what betrayal feels like. They know what emotional neglect feels like. They know the weight of carrying someone who stopped carrying them back. They know the sting of being misunderstood, dismissed, or taken for granted. These memories don't fade with age. They settle into the bones. So when a new woman comes along and says, "Give it another chance," she doesn't understand the calculation happening inside his mind. Dating again isn't just going to dinner. It's reopening doors to vulnerability.
And time wasters. We ain't dealing with people who just want to, you know, free meals and things of that nature. We ain't dealing with all that. We ain't dealing with nobody that's out there mooching off of us, you know, mooching off of our attention and things of that nature. You know, they are all in your DMs all of a sudden, all in your inboxes or shooting you text messages. "Hey, you want to hang out?" "No, I don't. If I wanted to hang out, I would have contacted you." But No, because when you ask me if we want to hang out, there's still this proclivity about the fact that you want to be taken care of as a part of us hanging out. And let me speak to something else, too, while I'm at it. I was watching this this clip, and it was that wasn't a clip. It was like a Facebook post where a brother had said ladies are mad because, you know, they're not being taken out as much. Men are becoming smarter with their money and so forth. And because men are becoming smarter with their money, that ladies are being upset. And the women in the comment section was speaking to the fact that we make as much money as you do, or we make more money. So, but I want to counter that particular argument, because a lot of young brothers don't know how to do that. No matter how much she makes, her money is her money. She does not make her money with the intention of spending it on you, brothers. So when she has her money, it don't matter if she makes more than you. When y'all go on a date, chances are she's still, especially a first date, y'all just getting to know each other, she's expecting you to cover the tab. So, as I always say,
the hunt is on. And you're the prey.
It's that simple. It's that simple. So, you know, take heed.
It's exposing the softest parts of himself to someone who hasn't earned them. It's risking emotional wounds that take longer to heal with age. A heartbreak at 25 hurts. A heartbreak at 65 can break a man in ways people don't see. Older men also carry a deeper fear that they won't recover the same way they used to. Starting over once took months. Starting over now could take years, and many simply don't want to lose that time again. They'd rather protect the stability they've built than gamble it on the hope that someone new will treat their heart with care. Trust requires energy, optimism, and vulnerability. Three things older men no longer give away freely. Not because they're cold, but because they're wise. They've learned that trust is the easiest gift to offer, and the hardest one to regain once it's broken. And for many of them, the emotional cost of rebuilding trust simply outweighs the potential reward. They're not guarding their hearts out of fear, they're guarding them out of survival. Section 5. Modern dating feels like a rigged game. When older men look at modern dating, they don't feel excitement, they feel disconnected, out of place, and frankly, uninterested. Dating used to be simple. You met someone through friends, through work, at a community event, at a place where people actually knew each other.
And by the way, I'm not going to comment on every point made, because I can, you know, what's understood doesn't need to be explained. Y'all already know how men are better. Like, men are more romantic, the more romantic of the species. How men actually love harder and things of that nature. So, yeah, the older you get, the more protected you become. Because as a man, the only person that can really harm you is somebody you let past that steel gate, that wall you put up around your heart. And typically, the only people that can get past that heart, I mean, get past that wall, is the women you allow into your lives. And that's why their words hurt more than anything else, because they say things that pierce that defensive mechanism that you've already put in place. So, you know.
You talked, you connected, you built something slowly. Today, dating feels more like a competition than a connection, a marketplace where everyone is performing and no one is being real. For older men, this new landscape feels rigged from the start. Dating apps reduce them to a handful of pictures and a short bio. They aren't judged by character, reliability, or wisdom. They're judged by filters, angles, and how well they can sell themselves in a sentence. They feel like they're auditioning instead of meeting someone. And the truth is, most older men don't want to audition for anyone. They also see the reality women face in the modern world. Endless attention, endless choices, endless distractions. Not because women are doing anything wrong, but because the dating market encourages it. Women have hundreds of options. Older men have maybe a handful. And they're expected to compete with younger, flashier, more attention-grabbing men for a chance at someone's time. Most simply won't do it. Not because they can't, but because they don't respect the game. Even when older men do go on dates, they can feel the disconnect immediately. Many women come in with expectations shaped by years of disappointments. Lists, rules, boundaries, and tests. Older men aren't interested in being evaluated like employees applying for a job. They're tired of proving themselves, tired of explaining themselves, tired of defending who they are. They want something simple and genuine, and modern dating rarely feels that way. So when they step back from the dating scene, it's not because they're intimidated or bitter. It's because the system feels transactional and exhausting. It asks for effort without guaranteeing sincerity. And older men have finally reached a point where they refuse to give energy to anything that doesn't feed their peace. Section 6. Intimacy isn't what it used to be. There's a truth about aging that no one teaches young men. Intimacy changes, not disappears, changes. When a man is young, desire drives everything. Biology is louder than logic. Attraction becomes motivation. The need for connection feels urgent, almost uncontrollable. But as men grow older, the intensity quiets, not because they stop caring, but because clarity replaces impulse. What once felt like a biological necessity becomes a conscious choice. Older men don't chase intimacy the same way because they finally understand the cost attached to it.
And the biology.
When they were young, they tolerated chaos, drama, mood swings, and misalignment just to feel wanted. But the older a man gets, the less willing he is to trade peace for temporary closeness. Intimacy that comes with stress doesn't feel like intimacy anymore. It feels like a burden. Older men also understand something younger men overlook. Intimacy doesn't fix loneliness. It doesn't fix emptiness. It doesn't fix disconnection. If anything, the wrong intimacy makes those feelings worse. It creates attachment without fulfillment. It creates responsibility without joy. It creates expectations a man no longer has the energy or desire to meet. They also know that intimacy later in life often comes with conditions. They've lived long enough to see how quickly affection can shift based on finances, effort, attention, or emotional compliance. Many older men feel that intimacy becomes something they must earn rather than something freely shared, and they won't play that game anymore. A man who has lived decades knows the difference between being desired and being used, but here's the real reason older men step away. They've learned that emotional peace lasts longer than physical satisfaction. A quiet morning, a stable routine, an uncluttered mind, those feel better than any temporary connection. That's not a lack of passion, it's wisdom. It's a man choosing long-term well-being over short-term comfort. Older men still value intimacy, but they no longer chase it blindly. It must come without chaos, without conditions, without emotional tolls. If it doesn't add peace to their life, they simply won't let it in. Section 7, freedom becomes non-negotiable. There's a specific moment in a man's life when freedom stops being a desire and becomes a requirement. It usually happens somewhere after 50, sometimes earlier, sometimes later. But once it hits, it changes him permanently. He no longer views freedom as something he gets in between relationships. He sees it as the foundation of his well-being, something he refuses to compromise ever again. Older men have lived through decades of responsibility. They've had calendars full of obligations they didn't choose. They've balanced partner needs, family expectations, social pressures, emotional demands, and countless situations where their time didn't belong to them.
And let me show you one thing real quick, right? Because this intimacy part is important. But I want y'all to peep this real quick because I want y'all to hear this particular piece, you know, while we're doing that. I want y'all to check this out. This speaks to a lot, too, about why men are more guarded about their intimacy the older we get.
This right here is the trap that a lot of us men fall for.
This lady wrote, "First, I know I am a horrible, disgusting person for this. My boyfriend and I have been seeing each other for around 6 months. He has always been the strong, silent type. And it's honestly what attracted me to him. He has been my emotional rock and looked after me, and I loved feeling protected and like I had someone so manly and solid. This all started when for the 100th time, he came home from work and just seemed upset. Usually I ask him what's wrong and he says nothing, and I say he can always open up. Well, the other night, for the first time, he cracked. He started to get emotional about his job and how he feels like he isn't doing enough in life and how he worries something is wrong with him medically. He's on depressants and he doesn't think his medication is helping. I was completely shocked seeing him like this, and I began to comfort him, and it seemed like he was on the verge of tears. I held him, but as he got up to go and shower, he went for a kiss and I just leaned back. This is going to sound horrible, but seeing him vulnerable and emotional completely repulsed me. I know it's wrong and I'm wrong and horrible, but seeing him in a moment of weakness made me just see him as not a man and was a turn-off romantically and sexually. Talking to a few other women, this is apparently not uncommon. I'm disgusted that I feel this way because my boyfriend doesn't deserve this, blah, 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 blah.
And there you go, right? They tell you to become vulnerable, to open up, this, that, and the other. And then as soon as you do, what happened? It repulses them. Not only that, let them get mad at you. They will weaponize that same vulnerable moment against you. That goes in storage banks. And I have not met one man who has been in a situation with a woman who, when she got mad, she didn't go for that vault and retrieve some of the things he shared with her in confidence and in his moment of weakness and intimacy. So that's why a lot of men are also choosing to be alone, because if they can't share the intimate parts, the most intimate parts with them, with the woman, what's the purpose of it? She's supposed to be a soft landing place. And if she's not that, then, you know, why ask why?
Now, finally, they have mornings that are quiet, predictable, and theirs. They have evenings without negotiation, weekends without commitments, days shaped entirely by their own rhythm. And once they taste that level of autonomy, it becomes sacred. Freedom for an older man isn't about avoiding people. It's about reclaiming himself. It's about waking up without tension. It's about eating what he wants, sleeping when he wants, and structuring his life around peace instead of obligation. It's about hobbies he abandoned, friendships he lost, passions he never had time for. It's about rebuilding the identity that slowly faded while he was busy supporting everyone else. Dating, no matter how promising, threatens that stability. It comes with expectations, routines, compromises, and emotional adjustments. It requires sharing space, time, and attention. It requires negotiation, and older men have reached a phase where negotiation feels like giving away pieces of themselves they work too hard to get back. They aren't selfish, they're simply done sacrificing. They spent their younger years building a life for others, now they want the years that remain to belong entirely to them. They don't want to check in. They don't want to be managed or corrected. They don't want someone rearranging their home, their schedule, or their priorities. They want to breathe freely. Freedom is no longer optional. It's survival. It's sanity. It's dignity. And once an older man has it, he protects it with the same intensity he once protected his family. Because at this stage of life, freedom isn't just a lifestyle. It's who he's finally allowed to be. Section 8, The Hidden Toll Relationships, Take on Older Men. Most people think older men avoid dating because they don't want companionship, but that's not the truth. What they really avoid is the hidden weight relationships put on their shoulders, a weight they carried for so many years that they refuse to pick it up again. Younger people assume relationships are 50-50. Older men know they rarely are. They know someone will always take the lead, manage the emotions, carry the stress and absorb the tension, and in most relationships, that someone was them. Older men remember the emotional labor that never showed up on any balance sheet, the unspoken expectation that they had to be steady while their partner was overwhelmed, the way they adjusted their moods, softened their reactions, and held back their frustrations just to keep the peace. These weren't small tasks. They were daily responsibilities, invisible responsibilities, and they drained men in ways no one around them truly understood. Then there's the caretaking burden no one mentions. When men age, people assume they'll step naturally into the role of emotional support for their partner, her family, her grown children, and whatever problems follow her life. Many men already lived through years of caretaking, sometimes through illness, depression, financial problems, or declining relationships. The idea of doing it again, from scratch, for someone new is overwhelming. It's not lack of compassion. It's that their emotional reserves aren't limitless anymore. Add to that the social expectations, the events, the family drama, the obligations, the adjustments. Older men know these commitments rarely fade, they only grow, and each commitment chips away at the peace they've finally built. They know stepping into a new relationship means stepping into someone else's world, someone else's needs, someone else's chaos. Older men aren't unwilling to give. They're simply done giving until they collapse. They've learned painfully that relationships don't just require love, they require stamina, emotional stamina. And that is something most older men refuse to spend on a situation that may not last, may not appreciate them, or may cost them the stability they fought so hard to create. Section 9, the world calls it lonely, men call it peace. When an older man chooses to stay single, the world rushes to label him lonely, avoidant, bitter, afraid of commitment. People assume there must be something wrong with him, because they can't imagine someone choosing a life without partnership. But older men know something most people never learn. Being alone and being lonely are not the same thing. Loneliness is the absence of connection. Peace is the absence of chaos, and peace, for many older men, outweighs everything else. Married friends often react the strongest. They'll say things like, "You don't want to grow old alone," or "It's sad to come home to an empty house." Yet these same men often look exhausted, drained, and resentful. Their lives are full of noise, obligations, and constant negotiation. They envy the very freedom they warn their single friends about. It's strange the men in cages are the ones telling the free man he should climb back inside. Family pressure doesn't help either. Adult children worry they'll have to take care of him someday. Siblings say he's giving up. Society implies he's incomplete without a partner. But none of these opinions come from understanding his reality. They come from fear. Fear that his choice challenges their assumptions about happiness, marriage, and aging. If he's content alone, what does that say about the sacrifices they're still making? But older men tune out the noise. They listen to something quieter, something more honest. Their own experience. They know they sleep better alone. They know their home is calmer, without conflict. They know their money, time, and energy flow toward things they value, not things they're pressured into. They know the difference between companionship that enriches life and companionship that suffocates it. When older men say they choose to be single, they're not rejecting love. They're rejecting chaos. They're rejecting stress. They're rejecting situations that take more than they give. The world calls it loneliness, but men who have lived long enough to know themselves call it something far deeper, far richer, and far more valuable: peace. Section 10, the final truth. Dying alone isn't the fear. Losing themselves is. People assume older men fear dying alone. They imagine some dramatic, tragic ending where a man reaches old age with no one beside him, regretting every choice he ever made. But ask older men today, really ask them, and you'll hear something completely different. They're not afraid of dying alone. They're afraid of spending the years they have left living a life that doesn't feel like their own. They're afraid of losing their identity, their routine, their mental clarity, their independence, all the things they fought years to reclaim. You see, older men don't think about death the way younger people imagine. They think about life, the quality of it, the peace of it, the ownership of it. They ask themselves one simple question: what kind of life do I want to live with the time I have left? And for many of them, the answer is a life without conflict, without pressure, without emotional demands, without someone reshaping their world again. Dying alone isn't the nightmare. Dying drained, controlled, unfulfilled, or resentful. That's what terrifies them. They spent their early years trying to be everything for everyone. They spent their middle years recovering from the cost of those early years. Now, in this final stretch, they want something they rarely had before: a life that belongs to them, a life shaped by their choices, not their obligations. If love appears in that space naturally, without force, without sacrifice, without chaos, they might welcome it, but they will no longer bend their lives to chase it. They won't bargain for peace. They won't trade stability for company. They won't give up the freedom they earned through pain, loss, and hard lessons. Choosing to be alone isn't about avoiding death. It's about protecting life, their life, the one they built, the one they finally understand, the one they refuse to compromise ever again. So when an older man says he'd rather die alone, he isn't expressing hopelessness. He's expressing sovereignty. He's declaring that his peace, his autonomy, and his identity are worth more than any relationship could ever offer. And that isn't fear. That's freedom.
So, there you have it. Those of us who are choosing to be alone, right? Choosing not to chase the, you know, what is it? Why must I be like that? Why must I chase the cat? Must nothing but the dog give me? Now, there's many of us who are not doing that anymore. You know, and it's not because, you know, and we can't be shamed into it. Can't be called gay and all this other stuff. Whereas, you know, you're trying to manipulate men and gaslight men into unfavorable positions just to be of service to women. No, a lot of us are just choosing to fall back. There's a lot more to life the older you get than chasing tail and chasing cat. It gets old, you get tired, especially if you had already been doing it. Like, come on, man. Like 2 or 3 years outside of my college years, my undergrad years, I was done with that. By age 24, 25, I was ready to settle down and get married. I was engaged by age 25. So, you know, there's just no answers in terms of, like, what men should do and what we shouldn't do. But let me take that back. There are answers. Men are choosing themselves and they're choosing peace. And it's somehow, for a world that hates men, especially black men, that when black men remove themselves from all of these different places, all of a sudden now, our absence becomes an annoyance. Brothers, hold yourself high, hold your head high, and make sure that, you know, we understand what our purpose is in life. Whatever your purpose that you choose to make it, you know, anybody you bring into your life has to be on your program to go forth in your purpose. You know, sometimes I go on date naps, and I don't go on date naps to find dates, because let's just be clear, I'm terrified of internet dating and learning people. You find the weirdest people on there. But I go in there sometimes just to see what the women post. And it often, like, the women that believe that they're accomplished often say that I have accomplished everything I need in life. Now I just want a man to fit in this piece, like this little last puzzle piece. The last piece missing in my life is an intentional man. In other words, that man has to come in and adopt and adapt to her lifestyle, her choices, her ways of living, her ways of operating. If she has a house, she's not selling her house to move into his. So that's it, man. You know, fellas, you know, don't feel like, don't allow them to gaslight you with all of this projection about men being lonely and things of that nature. You're perfectly fine out there. And if it's meant to be, you'll find somebody. You'll wander into one of those spaces and they'll find you. But, you know, maintain your peace, brothers. Because that's where, you know, most cats, she's like, man, that's a cool dude. That dude is cool because that dude found a way to maintain his peace. So with that said, family, you know, prayers up for my family. You know, I appreciate all the love and support from everybody. And also, you know, as I always tell y'all, stay safe, you know, protect yourself, stay healthy as you possibly can. And war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that said, I am out of here.